In her new book, The Cracker Queen, published by Gotham Books, author Loretta Hannon shares how you can gain victory from life's hardest times and laugh through the tears. On a recent visit to the studio, she discusses the plot and subplot of her life. Loretta, first of all, following the outline of a good story, what would you say is the plot and subplot of your life?
I guess it's the story of a little girl who was born into a family that lived on the wrong side of the tracks in the South. Their behavior was a whole lot like a country and western song, in that they did a lot of drinking and fighting and crying, but most of all, they laughed. And I think that's because seeing the sense of humor in the bad things that come your way, I think that's the ultimate coping strategy. So I learned that really early on. So it's the story of coming up a little hard, but along the way, seeing the incredible value of love and forgiveness and gratitude and purpose, and always refusing to be a victim. Moving forward whenever any of that tough stuff happens to you that life always throws at you at some point.
So for you, after reading this wonderful book yesterday, and it is a wonderful read, you chose to allow the hardships in your life to make you better and not bitter.
Absolutely. You know, I was surrounded, like a lot of folks, surrounded by people who were making the other choices. They were choosing to stay right in their ruts. In the book, I call them the rut dwellers. And I decided that I did have a choice and that I was going to turn it into the thing that made me better and helped me to move forward with the wisdom I gained from all these challenges.
You had a very difficult beginning because you were almost not born.
That's true. My mother had suffered many, many miscarriages before she was pregnant with me. And so you can imagine the heartbreak there. And so when she found out she was pregnant yet again, she just decided she couldn't bear it. And so she went to the abortionist in our county. And this was before, you know, abortion was legal. But everyone knew who to go to. And she went to the lady's house in the middle of the country. She passed a cotton field on her way. And my mom grew up under grinding poverty. Even when she was a little girl, she was out there picking cotton. And when it was time to harvest the cotton, if there was a full moon, she would go out with her family and pick throughout the night, because the light of the full moon would enable them to work many extra hours. And she said it was a comfort to her to see those cotton bowls, you know, sparkling under that moonlight as she was heading to the abortionist's house in the middle of this pine forest. But when she got there, the abortionist just looked her up and down and said, "No, ma'am, I can't take this baby. This baby is to be born, is to have life." So it's kind of a dramatic entrance into the world. But I say in the book that I think that the atmosphere in which I entered this world, which was amid fervent love, and I had to come out fighting very hard, I think that set me up very well. It was great training sort of for the years that followed.
Your daddy died what we would consider today a very young age. 62 isn't mm-hmm. that old.
Mm-hmm.
But there was a 20-year span between your mom and your dad, and you write in your book that you prayed to God that he would at least live until you were 16. Mm-hmm. And then after his passing, mm-hmm. you had a peace that most teenagers would never say that they had mm-hmm. in their dad's passing. Do you think that it might be because you yourself almost died before you even born?
You know, I think what it was, because I had been praying for years for my father to live up to a certain point. And that's funny that I was even doing that, because he had no illnesses that we knew of. You know, he died suddenly of a heart attack and I was with him, which I talk about in the book. But in other words, there weren't any signals or signs, you know, that anything was going to happen to him. But he was a good bit older than a lot of my friends' fathers. And so it was really funny, because when he died, of course I was devastated, but I was also grateful, because I had prayed for him to live a certain number of years at least, and I got some bonus years. And I was just aware of that, and I was very, very thankful. And that sounds strange, because yes, I was shattered and damaged for years. I don't want to downplay that. But there was that magical thing called gratitude in there too. And I felt so fortunate just to have had him in my life for as long as I did. And the peace that hit me when he died, it was kind of like a lightning bolt that just went through me. It was as if he was giving me the message, all is well, I'm gone. but all is well. And that gave me that strength to get through it. And it was funny because friends and family members kept looking at me funny as time wore on, and they'd think, when is Loretta going to snap? When is she going to break? And I shed many tears, don't get me wrong, but they couldn't quite understand or fathom where my strength was coming from. But it was coming from a spiritual source, actually, so I never lost it.
You were very young when you experienced much of which most people don't experience as adults. Do you find that by you seeing the trials and tribulations of the different neighborhoods, actually, that melding neighborhoods,
yes,
that you lived in, and seeing how your parents cope with it, not always in the best of ways,
right,
but always being resilient and always giving you that sense of place,
mm-hmm,
that love that made you feel, I'm protected, I'm okay.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think in today's world, because things are ever so constantly changing,
mm-hmm,
that the stereotypes that we place on one another, whether we be from the South or from the,
mm-hmm,
North or the East or the West, the stereotypes that we place on saying, you know, well, that only happens to that part of the country, is fair?
I don't think it's fair, because humans are humans. And we all go through the same things. Maybe the houses look a little different. Maybe the landscape is different. But that internal landscape is the same. And it's that thing that makes us all brothers and sisters. So I don't think that's fair. And a lot of times people will ask me, Loretta, what is it about Southern storytellers, Southern writers? Aren't we the best? And, you know, I am a little biased. I do think we're pretty darn good. But people have stories to tell everywhere, and they're incredible stories, regardless of the geographical location.
I'll be back with more of my conversation with Loretta Hannon, author of The Cracker Queen, in a moment.
Once upon a time, not your time, but one time,
long, long ago,
storytelling instills the love of language in children
and motivates them to read.
Albert Einstein told us that imagination is more important than knowledge.
I want to be a princess. Princess.
Imagination is more important than knowledge.
I'll be a dragon.
I want to be a dragon.
Storytelling encourages children to visualize images.
I can see the story in my head.
Telling stories from around the world creates an awareness and appreciation of different cultures.
I would love to go visit China.
Through storytelling, vocabulary is expanded.
Spending lots of time telling family tales and lore is important to every child.
Mommy, will you tell me a story?
And they lived happily ever after.
The end.
The end.
The end. Ayayo.
Where do you think you get your gift for writing from?
You know, I've always listened a whole lot. Even when I was a little kid, my parents would always say, my goodness, it's like we have to get in the car and drive a mile away to keep Loretta from hearing what we're saying, you know, when they would be trying to have private discussions. And I've just always sat and listened wherever I've been. And I remember everything. When this book came out, my mama said, golly, Loretta, how can you remember what I was wearing and exactly what I said? But that is what I said. How do you know that? You were four. And it's just from paying attention and trying to be present and all that. Well, as a grown-up, that's what I would call it more. But back then, it was just listening. And I've always had an ear for stories and the flow and rhythm of stories. And rhythm is so important in my writing. You know, I think that's where it comes from. I really do. And I've always been a fanatic for words and language.
Which is true about your book. Your writing is both eloquent and earthy, which melded together, it's honest. You speak very frankly about your background, making no apologies. And you also dispel the myth that everyone that's from the South isn't a Southern belle. So I'm going to use that as a segue for you to define what a cracker queen is.
Okay. Most typically, a cracker queen is a strong, fabulous, authentic person who maintains her sense of humor no matter what happens, who refuses to be a victim, and who will really raise Cain if you cross the line with her too many times. You know, this person is not an angel. A cracker queen can be both the life of the party and the reason the police have to be called. And that's why it's so much fun to be a cracker queen. And it's somebody who chooses to receive life in a way that says, okay, whatever happens, I'm going to try to see the lessons and the gifts hidden within the disaster that's happened to me. I'm going to try to learn and move forward. Cracker Queen is somebody who does not care one whit what anyone thinks about her. And when I say her, it's most typically, you know, a female, but being a Cracker Queen is, like I said, this way of receiving the world with joy, love, gratitude, this sense of humor. But it can be anybody. It can be a male, female. It doesn't matter where you're from, your age, anything like that. It's all in how you respond to what happens to you.
You also describe your intuition as being a protective way for you to have warded off near-death experiences when you were a student at UGA.
That's right.
Do you think that most people really listen to that inner voice when it's telling them, you know, I think you better think twice before you go down this road?
You know, a lot of people have emailed me about their intuition problems since the book came out. And the main problem is people are just trying to overthink things rather than disconnecting and in turn connecting to your inner guide, which is your intuition. And your intuition is never, ever wrong. And it's an amazing thing to be connected to because it will guide you through so many things that will confuse other people and cause, you know, other people who are not really connected to that will suffer the consequences. But, you know, I think some of us are just more naturally inclined that way and others have to work a little harder at it. But so I think there's a range out there and I always do whatever my intuition tells me to do. And sometimes it tells me to do things that from the world's perspective, those decisions I make look crazy or maybe they just look not so smart, but they've always been right in the end. So I'm completely secure and confident in what it tells me to do. And I hope other people will be more inclined to do that too as a result of reading about my book.
What would you say is the most inspiring thing that you've ever experienced in your life thus far?
I get the most inspiration from two sources, and that's music and nature. When I was driving up here for the interview, I mean, I was just almost blissed out by the beauty of the trees, for example. And music to me is the purest form of language. I think it's divine communication. So music and nature are my sort of daily inspirations. But in terms of my whole Cracker Queen way of approaching things, there was a person from my childhood who was really critical, and that was my great Aunt Martha. And I talk about her in the book and how she showed me that there are other ways to live your life from the way that I was coming up, that there's a way, regardless of how much money you have in your bank account, that you can live with great joy, where you're laughing every day, where everything is rich and beautiful and amazing. And so I talk about her, and it's amazing how one person can have such an influence on you, because I spend a total of 5 hours a year in her presence between the ages of 7 and 16, and she showed me all that and helped me to change the course of my life when I was a teenager.
What gave you the courage to step away from a career that had reached its pinnacle of success to say, this is really not for me. I want to get out of the rat race. I want to get off of the merry-go-round. I want to get out of the bumper-to-bumper commute and live in the moment.
You know, it was time, and I knew it was time to move towards my authentic self and what I thought all this time I really should be doing and what I was supposed to be doing. But fear kept preventing me from going in this direction because I knew I'd have to take tremendous risk. I would have to give all that security up in order to make a go at this. And I had to be a responsible person. I had a mortgage to pay. I had all this, that, and the other. And it was fear that kept me from doing it. Finally, I just could not continue to live that way. It was not a good life. I was stressed out all the time. Even though I loved my job, you know, that was part of the problem too. I actually loved the actual job I was in. But the commute was killing me. The hours were killing me. It was affecting my health. It was affecting my spirit. You know, my light was growing a little dimmer and dimmer as each year passed living this way. And so I said, well, now's the time to just to try this other way. And so I did. And also the difference was I gained faith that it would be okay and I'd be taken care of whatever happened.
There is a very important dynamic that I don't want to miss in the writing of your book. Again, you put it very eloquently, but you also keep it factual, and that is the relationship that you and your mother had. You had ups and downs and ins and outs, just like any other mother-daughter relationship, and there was a point where it was very tenuous,
yes,
whether or not the two of you would even have a relationship when you became an adult.
Mm-hmm.
But you speak of forgiveness, which I am a big advocate for, in not allowing mm-hmm. the past to affect the present.
Mm-hmm.
And there are many people who have a real problem with forgiving, whether it be a spouse, whether it be a sibling, mm-hmm. whether it be a friend, a coworker, or whatever. How was it for you to mm-hmm. get, because there's some, again, I don't want to give away everything in the book. I want people to read it. But there were some really hard things that most people would have said, Loretta, I don't blame you one bit for disassociating yes. yourself with your mom.
Mm-hmm.
What made you say, I need her mm-hmm. in my life?
Mm-hmm. You know, it wasn't so much I need her. It's I love her. And she loves me despite all this hardcore stuff that went down that I talk about. We loved each other. And I'd rather focus on that than bad things that happened a long time ago or at some point in the past. That's the past. Now is now. Why would you choose to live back then? Why would you want to focus on that stuff? Why would you want to let that have power over you and your happiness? I mean, it's just a really stupid choice, especially when you see what happens with the power of forgiveness and how it can heal things. It's really funny because my mother is the number one supporter of this book. And that just tells you how far she's come as well. Because when I sent her an advanced copy of the book, I really didn't know if she might disown me for life or if she might support it or, you know, be somewhere in the middle. I didn't know. But she knows it's the truth, and it was told with love and kindness, really, considering all the things that happened. And so when you hold a grudge, which is what I consider not being forgiving of someone or something, it really does suspend you back in that time and place, and it keeps you from moving forward.
And as far as community, you have a perspective on life. I should say your family, or the Cracker Queen image, has a very giving spirit. You give to
yes.
those who are less fortunate. You give to the point to your own demise oftentimes. When so many people are struggling, like they've mm-hmm. never struggled before,
mm-hmm.
and think that I have nothing in this world tangibly to give.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What would you say to that person?
I would say that it's not about the material things. It's not about the check that you cannot write. It's about the way you interact with anyone and everyone who's in your presence, who's in the room with you, whatever room it is. You can give in terms of showing that person love, making that first person feel valuable and special. That's what my great Aunt Martha did. You know, when I was about 12 years old, I started noticing, wow, how is it that this lady makes everyone feel so good? And then I realized it was love. You know, she loved them. And it could be a stranger. You can love a stranger. You can show a stranger love. I mean, things are hard right now. Things are hard, but good. And you have to emphasize the good and the things that you can do, the things that you do have control over.
Loretta, what would you like your P.S. to be in your life? Would you like it to end with a period, or would you like it to end with an exclamation point?
Oh my gosh, you know those little symbols that they show when somebody says bad cuss words? I would like for it to say, she made somebody laugh. And then I'd like for it to have all those crazy symbols and lots of exclamation points, yes.
I've been speaking with Loretta Hannon. She is the author of The Cracker Queen. Thank you so much, Loretta, for coming on the program.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you.
The Cracker Queen is available online at thecrackerqueen.com and most major bookstores.